This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You've reached another Joy 94.9 podcast.
The hottest event on the LGBTIQ calendar is the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras.
And this way it is. Joy.
Thanks to our Joy sponsors, Virgin Australia, who'll fly you there, Airbnb, who'll put you up for your stay, and GoGet, who'll drive you around in style.
Then have the time of your life celebrating the Mardi Gras Parade with a view money can't buy at the Joy 94.9 VIP broadcast.
An unforgettable experience you don't want to miss.
For a chance to win, donate $5 to Joy via joy.org.au.
Enter as many times as you like. There's no limits.
The more times you donate $5, the more chances you have to win.
But do it before Feb 17.
D's and C's apply. See joy.org.au.
The joy of summer.
The joy of Mardi Gras.
Joy 94.9.
This is another podcast of Walk Wide Way, the international LGBT news and current affairs show. Every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
This is World Wide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show for the LGBTI community. We take you around the globe, one country at a time. In the studio with me tonight, Dean is here.
G'day, Matt.
Hello, Tom.
Hello.
Paul's here too.
Hello.
And I am indeed Matt. Now, living through Nazi Germany is, as somebody who was different, was a challenge at the best of times and a death sentence at the worst. Yet somehow a transvestite managed to survive and perhaps even in some ways thrive through this period. Tonight, we're off to Germany.
Having survived the homophobic Nazi regime, was life in East Germany any better under communist rule?
What quirky collection led to a museum to be created to house her life's obsession?
Is her story all that she says? Or have lies and secrets reshaped the history of this fascinating character? Shining a light in the dark places of Germany from the 1940s to the 1990s with us tonight is Sean Rennie, director of the Midsummer show I Am My Own Wife, about the life of Berlin's most notorious transgendered woman, Charlotte van Morrisdorf. Here's a taste of what you have coming up tonight.
And what's fascinating and what is interesting is that a lot of the records were lost after the war, essentially, or during the war. And so, you know, we only have her word to go by and this Stasi file, and they don't always match up. And I guess that's the brunt of the play.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
Well, this week we're starting off in the USA, where bathroom cops may soon become a reality in Alabama. Yes, what has been a joke may become a reality if Alabama Republicans get their way. In what is not at all a waste of taxpayers' money, Senator Philip Williams has introduced legislation that will require facilities open to people, irrespective of their gender, to employ attendants stationed at the door of each restroom to monitor the appropriate use of the restroom and answer any questions or concerns posed by users.
Do they do the cleaning as well? See, if they did the cleaning, that'd be good.
I don't know.
Greece and Italy for years. You have these old women sitting outside.
And they actually
the
almost live in there, don't they? Yes. And you give them a tip and
you
everything.
You have to give them a tip or you get a very nasty something.
Gentlemen, this is Alabama, so we're not going to get friendly little old ladies in there. It's going to be guys wearing like military SWAT team outfits. So otherwise, bathroom or changing facilities that are designed to be used by multiple persons must be exclusively for persons of the same gender.
This is a backdoor way of getting around the genderless toilets thing.
Good.
And transgender people using bathrooms.
True and good use of the word backdoor. So those who run afoul of the law would be required to pay a fine ranging from $2,000 to $3,500, and would be open to lawsuits. Now, the bill, SB1, to be called the Alabama Privacy Act, should it pass, will be voted on by the Alabama Judiciary Committee next month. Now, they joined seven other states that have pre-filed or introduced legislation that would restrict access to multi-user restrooms, locker rooms, and other sex-segregated facilities on the basis of a definition of sex or gender consistent with sex assigned at birth or biological sex in the 2017 legislative session.
Whose privacy are they actually trying to protect?
Christians. Now, North Carolina has been hit with boycotts that have resulted in the loss of millions of dollars in revenue and hundreds of jobs. So they passed a bill which was called the HB2 bill, requiring transgender individuals to use bathrooms and locker rooms in government-owned buildings matching the gender of their birth certificate. Now, this has had a bit of a negative impact because California, for one, has banned taxpayer-funded travel to North Carolina because of their crazy HB2 laws, as has other states as well. So you'll hear more about this in the upcoming months, I expect.
Oh, I can beat you on wasting money. The HNS in England has spent over £1,000.
£100,000.
Sorry, £100,000. I told you I could beat you on it. In fighting against funding for HIV prevention drug PrEP.
Hang on, let's clarify this. They're taxpayers' not fighting dollars. Against HIV. They're nope. fighting against funding it.
They're fighting against funding PrEP.
Well, they have to now, but they really... Oh, they fought tooth and nail.
Yes, they were taken to court by the National AIDS Trust, who challenged the NHS in court, and they lost. So they have to pay their own legal fees and also their legal fees as well.
A whopping £115,000.
I love that that's made up, though. £107,000 was the NHS... That's their legal bill, and $8,000 was the AIDS Trust. So can't you do well when you're a not-for-profit, I reckon?
Oh, it gets better, though. It's so sleazy. So during the legal fight to get PrEP funded nationally, the NHS were accused of feeding negative stories to the press in an effort to knock public support. So HIV charities and healthcare campaigners were angry at the way funding for PrEP was portrayed as a threat and competitor to other treatments. So basically, yeah, we'll fund PrEP, but, you know, kids won't get, you know, chemotherapy anymore and stuff like that.
Whereas, in fact, if it actually saves one life, it saves £360,000.
And well, you're good at saving money as well.
Yes.
If it happened here in Australia, it might prevent a health minister from going to the Gold Coast. Now, across to Russia, where Russia is now accounting for a staggering 64% of all HIV cases across Europe. And this is up on the previous numbers. It's going against the trend of everywhere else in Europe. And in 2015, they had nearly 100,000 new diagnoses. This is huge. What is going on
in
Russia?
So not talking about it doesn't actually stop people getting
HIV. Definitely not. Now, interestingly, though, experts say the most common means of transmission is intravenous drug use, and the Russian government has very limited programs to help injecting drug users. So these figures, in fact, may well be underestimated.
Now, moving on to Pakistan, where we actually have, yes, good news. They will count transgender people in the national census for the first time when it surveys the population in March this year, following a top court ruling on Monday. Now, the Lahore High Court has issued an order to the government, and transgender people, because of a petition filed by a transgender activist last November, have indicated that their fundamental rights should be recognised by including them in the sixth national census.
And in fact, they're thinking there might be up to 500,000 transgender people that will come up. Now, in brief, in the USA, research by economists in North Carolina has shown an anti-LGBT bill has so far cost the state a whopping $560 million.
Okay, they win on the losing of money. Chinese court has ruled that a trans man has not been discriminated against when he was sacked from his job.
And in Cambodia, police have vowed to arrest the creators of a Photoshop picture that shows the country's king having gay sex. That's his story anyway. And that's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hello, this is Wolfgang from Konchitawurst City, which is Vienna in Austria. You're listening to Worldwide Wave from Joy 94.9.
We are in Germany tonight as we take you around the world, one country at a time. Messages, we love our messages. And 317's messaged in, should we be taking more interest in our freedom of speech that is loosely disguised as bullying, and what might the ramifications be here for Australia? So this is sort of people, there's elements here in Australia trying to change the things like racial vilification laws to allow them to say whatever they like. I think, yes, I would say. What do you think? Should we be more concerned?
It's such a broad question. You'll need to give me a few minutes to think about that one.
It's also those issues of privacy. I mean, there's a bit of a generational thing where I think, and Tom might come in here being the young person here. Young people just don't seem to be as scared by privacy issues and things.
I think just we've already signed our life away on every other social media platform. So
you're already out there. You've got nothing to lose. Well, there you
some
go.
Their life started on Facebook, literally.
This is World Wide Wave.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your Fun Fast Facts.
Now, we're talking tonight all things Germany, and in particular, we're talking about a character, I'd have to say, a character, Charlotte von Mahlsdorf, who was a transvestite, born 1928, born as Lothar Berfeld, but even at a very young age felt that she was more like a girl, and had a bit of a difficult, challenging start because her father was not, let's say, not supportive. Probably not unusual.
He was a member of the Nazi party.
He was and a high-up member as well. So he was actually sort of in charge of their town of Mahlsdorf, which is where she actually adopted her final name from. And her father forced her to join the Hitler Youth for a period of time as well. So, yeah, look, we can certainly say that they did not get on at all.
Didn't see eye to eye.
That's very true.
Now, they often quarrelled, but it came to a head in 1944 because her mother left the family during the evacuation and her father demanded that Charlotte choose between the parents, threatening her with a gun and leaving her in a room with an hour to choose. When she came back, Charlotte biffed him over the head with a rolling pin and killed him.
Wow. That's pretty pretty intense. She was to serve some jail time there, but at the end of the war, the jails were opened up, so she only served a very short sentence there.
That's convenient.
And one of the interesting things, she actually collected artifacts. So from both the Jewish people who were being taken out and taken to the concentration camps, she was able to find things in their houses, but also when they built the wall in Germany, as the people fled to West Germany, she would go into their houses and find artifacts. And it actually turned into the Gründerzeit Museum. So in 1960, it was opened up. The Museum of Everyday Articles. So it's like capturing this time capsule of everyday life in Germany.
Isn't that akin to looting?
Well, that is one of the very interesting things that we are speaking with our guest tonight, because one of the fascinating things as a part of this journey, Charlotte met a journalist after the Berlin Wall came down, and out of a whole lot of interviews, the journalist turned that into a play, which is showing at Midsummer, and that is who we are speaking to tonight. We are talking all things Germany on World Wide Wave.
This is Tseke Kasambala from Human Rights Watch, South Africa office on the World Wide Wave.
So it would already be clear to you that Charlotte von Mahlsdorf is probably not a name that many of you know, of course, until tonight. One of the many outstanding shows in this year's Midsummer Festival is I Am My Own Wife, and it describes Charlotte's story as Berlin's most notorious transgendered woman. We asked the show's director, Sean Rennie, to tell us a bit about Charlotte.
Charlotte was a famous... When the wall came down in Berlin, she was discovered essentially by the West. She lived in Eastern Berlin, and she lived openly as a transsexual woman, and she survived both the Nazis and the communists. And so when the wall came down, a lot of journalists, obviously from the West, went into East Berlin looking for news stories, essentially. And Doug Wright, the playwright, came across her through a friend of his, John Marx, and just essentially fell in love with her as a character study, just because, you know, essentially she's a queer hero. She lived openly as a transvestite, a transsexual, from an early age during the Nazi regime and then right through the communist regime as well. And so when the playwright first discovers her, he thinks that he's hit a slam dunk in terms of character studies, essentially. And so he sets about writing this play about her life. And in the course of doing so, throughout the time he's interviewing her, the play itself takes place through a lot of interviews that Doug Wright has with her over the course of many years. During the course of writing the play, the Stasi files were released. And so he gets his hands on a Stasi file, and you know, it turns out that Charlotte doesn't quite give us all the full story herself. And so therefore the play explores the stories that we tell about ourselves, the stories that we like to tell about ourselves, as opposed to what is truth and what is history, and you know, what is history in a way? Is it just what gets written down, or is it what people remember? So it's an amazing character study, and she is an incredible person.
Charlotte had a fairly challenging start, I guess. Her father was already a member of the Nazi Party, and in fact was one of the local leaders in her area, and forced her to join the Hitler Youth, I understand.
Yes, that's correct. He was quite a brutal man by her accounts. And what's fascinating and what is interesting is that a lot of the records were lost after the war, essentially, or during the war. And so, you know, we only have her word to go by and this Stasi file, and they don't always match up. And I guess that's the brunt of the play. Doug Wright, in trying to tell her story, figured out that the biggest conflict in the play is actually his battle with trying to, you know, tell his heroine's story, but also tell the ugly parts of it as well without betraying her. So it's quite you know, it's a tale of survival and what one does in order to survive and live authentically. Who's to judge what you would do in order to survive the Nazis and the communist regime of East Berlin?
To director Sean Rennie describing how Charlotte von Malsdorf perhaps created a bit of her own history from the Midsummer play I Am My Own Wife. Coming up, Sean explains how Charlotte's unusual obsession turned into a museum collection. This is your Worldwide Wave.
Hi, this is François Sagat. Et vous écoutez Joy sur 94.9.
Hello and goedenavond. This is Elko, listening in from the Netherlands on Worldwide Wave, the latest LGBT news and current affairs on joy.org.au.
Where tonight we've stopped off in Germany. A few messages coming in. A note about the terminology we've been using. We've mentioned the word transvestite, and thank you for that message there. It is an outdated term, and some people do find it offensive. We did discuss this pre-show, and the context of that word is the, I guess, in the history of this at the time that Charlotte was living her life, transvestite was the actual correct terminology. In fact, did you know transvestite came from Germany? That was coined by a German scientist, and we did that on our Berlin show. We did a show on gay Berlin in the 1930s, late last year. Good listen on that one as well. So we do acknowledge that, and we do normally refer to, it would normally be a trans woman or a trans person, but the historical context is this is why we've sort of brought that into the discussion tonight. But thank you for that. We love getting those sorts of messages and feedback. Another one from Graham says, when will Germany have same-sex marriage? For such an advanced society, it seems to be lagging behind in this area, like Australia.
And like Australia, yeah. It'll be when there's a change of government.
Yeah, because Angela Merkel's actually spoken out and said she's not going to support it.
Mm.
And you've got to recognise that it is a particularly Christian, I mean, CDU, the Christian Democratic Party.
Some of the clubs in Germany, some of the gay clubs, they are so not Christian, let me tell you. There's some weird stuff that happens.
Outside Berlin, yes.
Coming up, Matt's going to tell us about Berlin's seedy underbelly.
Tonight we are in Germany looking at the life of the German transvestite Charlotte von Malsdorf. In the show in Midsummer play, I Am My Own Wife, it is clear that Charlotte was not afraid to stand out from the crowd. The show's director, Shane Rennie, explains how one of these eccentric obsessions highlights the conflicts in the play.
She's fascinating. She was obsessed with a particular type of furniture from the, it's called the Gründerzeit period. And so when when the war was happening, she would actually save these pieces of furniture from the Gundersheim period in her own home. And so when the wall came down, she was awarded a medal of honor from the new government for her services in preserving a particular part of German history. So she's just so fascinating in so many ways.
And she, in fact, turned that into a museum of those pieces later. But actually getting those pieces, I understand that she was involved in clearing out the apartments of deported Jews and also found things when the wall went up in Berlin, grabbed things when people were leaving, those sorts of things. Is that a part of that balance of what's good and what's bad?
Absolutely, absolutely. Her obsession with this furniture, you know, in one way can be painted as she's doing a service and doing the people of Germany a service by saving this particular type of furniture. But the other side of that coin is that she was actually taking furniture from people's homes. So, you know, it wasn't, maybe it was a totally selfless act or maybe it wasn't. And I guess that's, the play doesn't really ever answer these questions for us. It sort of just, it throws the questions out there, and it's up to, you know, the audience, the reader, and history to sort of make up their own mind, I guess.
Having survived the Nazi regime, did things get any better for Charlotte under the communist East Germany?
Well, she managed to... there's a line in the play that says, you have to howl with the wolves. So it does become known towards the end of Act One that she was actually an informant for the Stasi. And so, which essentially allowed her to, you know, live her life and possibly get away with, she ran the only gay bar, she says, in Eastern Berlin. And it is sort of alluded to that she was able to do that because she was an informant for the Stasi and potentially even betrayed her own friends and ex-lovers in order for privileges. So, you know, again, it's that type of balance between, you know, who's to say what you would do in order to survive. But yeah, so she found a way to survive, and I'm not sure if it was easy for her, but, she only ever really paints the story from one angle, and it's up to Doug Wright, the playwright, to pose the questions otherwise.
And for you as a director, what drew you to this story and made you want to bring it to Australian audiences?
Essentially, it was a match between the actor Ben Gerard and the piece. I had actually, when I lived in New York many years ago at the beginning of last decade, I had seen the original production in 2004, and it stayed with me just because it's such an incredible story, and it's an incredible task to have one actor. So the piece is played by one actor, Ben Gerard in this case, who people may know from Molly. He played Molly's best friend Caroline in the recent Molly TV series, and Open Slather, he's been on TV quite a lot, and he's an incredible character actor. So Ben plays predominantly Charlotta as a 65-year-old German transvestite woman, but at the same time also plays 35 different characters.
Wow.
How
does one person do that? I mean, that's 35 different mindsets, not to mention costumes, I'm guessing.
Well, so it's all in one costume, and which is essentially what Charlotta herself wore, which was a very simple, plain black schmuck, I guess, and a headscarf with a string of pearls. But yeah, it's an amazing feat for one actor. It's a tour de force. So it was a match in going back to the first question. It was a match of knowing that Ben Gerard was the right man in Australia for this job. And he, having seen his work before and being familiar with his work, I just knew that he would be incredible in the role. And so I took it to him and said, hey, I would like to direct this play with you in it. And I think he was quite shocked and a bit, I'm not sure if he even had thought that he would be capable of it, but I knew that he would be amazing. So that was why the piece first came about in Sydney. I was a newish director, and I had a personal relationship with Ben, so I just was like, yeah, let's do it. But it went very well. In terms of the actual sort of transitioning between characters, and that's part of the, thematically, it's part of what happens in the show, is that, you know, we all have different sides of ourselves, and in some way we're all in drag at some point. You know, we all present certain parts of ourselves to the world. So, you know, in having the Nazi Stasi officials wearing a schmuck and a string of pearls, it sort of means that all the characters are in drag in some way as well. And so it's an amazing device, and it's an amazing story, and part of it, and the biggest thrill is watching one actor tell this story by himself.
Sean Rennie, director of the Midsummer show I Am My Own Wife, opening next Tuesday night in the Midsummer Festival. You're, of course, listening to Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9, where we go around the world one country at a time. And at the moment, we're in Germany, talking about Carlotta von Malsdorf.
Love that concept of we're all in drag at some point in time. I mean, I love creative people who can sort of turn this into something we can digest in a play or something like that. But that whole idea of we all have masks, we all do, you know, we dress up what we want people to see.
Well, that's what RuPaul's been saying for years. We're all born naked and the rest is drag. So, yeah, it's quite a universal concept, really. I mean, but poor thing, wearing just one schmock and a string of pearls the whole time.
A string of pearls, that's got some class to it. Now, for the writer, this is another layer to this story. I can just picture the writer sort of stumbling across this person, starting to talk to them and think, this is fascinating, and taking down all the stories and starting to write this play, and then goes away and starts doing some research and finds out, I guess, some of the bad things that were forgotten in the interviews with Charlotta.
I love that polite euphemism, forgotten.
Forgotten.
Our memory can be very selective.
Somehow, yeah, selectively forgot to mention the profiteering.
But that whole struggle of, I mean, it'd be a bit shattering for a while, thinking, oh my God, I think I thought I had a, you know, award-winning story here, and now I'm starting to get down on it. But seemingly the play has turn that into the angst, the challenge for the playwright as well.
Look, the challenge has obviously been met, because it won not only the Pulitzer Prize for Drama in 2004, but the Tony Award for Best Actor and also Best Play in 2004 as well. This thing has been showered with awards.
And good audiences too. So it's played once here in Australia in Sydney to sell out season. So coming here to Midsummer. I'm interested with that whole story, that whole decision process of, you know, what would you do to survive? Obviously, there's some conflicting things here where Charlotta has done some things which aren't necessarily nice, but it's just purely about surviving.
One of the things when you read about World War II, and obviously all of us are too young to have been born at the time, even you, Matt. So, you know, we're all sort
of... I'm just glad he didn't point at me.
So, war is all about survival in a lot of ways. And Charlotta, one of the things, certainly World War II, people find themselves doing things that they otherwise would never do in order to make it.
And it's not just about being on the front line. It's the people back home. It's dealing with the loss and actually surviving. I mean, they were being attacked as well. Don't forget, Germany was bombed, the UK was bombed. So the war came to them. You had to do what you could to survive.
Rationing, food shortages. I mean, the Nazis were in power. It's not like they were great administrators to begin with. So, yeah.
And I guess one of the added benefits that came out of this whole thing is that East Germany got a gay bar.
Well, you know, I mean, there's always a silver lining.
Paying off a few people, I'm quite sure. An incredible one actor playing 35 roles, that does my head in.
Well, he's earning his money, that's for sure.
Well, only if people buy tickets to go along and see it, I guess. But Ben Gerard, yeah, did you see the Molly Telly movie? I saw that. Is it really? Yeah, it's quite. I remember him now that once I've sort of seen which character he was. So I think he will fulfil this with spades. We've got more coming up with the director Sean Rennie on Worldwide Wave.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show, subscribe to iTunes, or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hello, Australia. This is Gabrielle from Luxembourg. From the other side of the world, we share in your fight for same-sex marriage. Good luck to everyone at Joy 94.9.
Tonight we are talking all things Germany. The show we've been featuring is I Am My Own Wife, which is featuring at Midsummer. The director is Sean, and we were asking him what he hoped Australian audiences would take away from seeing this story about a German transvestite.
So I think it's interesting. In the time since we produced the play in Sydney, the trans community has become much more last year with, you know, say, Caitlyn Jenner, and it's become a much more sort of visual and relevant topic. And so it's been really, it's quite fascinating. This person, Charlotte von Molsdorf, was living authentically and bravely and unapologetically in the 30s and 40s. So it's just an incredible story of how someone was able to do that and sort of, you know, didn't apologize for it. So I hope that she inspires people in a lot of ways. And at the same time, I think it's also a good piece in examining what, you know, gets put down to history and what necessarily is true and what is history isn't always the same thing. It's a nice reminder of that.
And your interest in taking this further, you said you had a great sellout season in Sydney and now bring it to Melbourne and then Brisbane. For you personally, is there something that you've taken away or learnt from this production?
Yeah, good question. Very good question. Yeah, I guess she inspires me to try to live authentically. I don't know. She's a bit of an anti-hero in a lot of ways. And Doug Wright, the playwright, who is one of the central characters in the play, Ben Doug Wright wrote himself into the play, and Ben plays him pretty much half the time as well. As I said, the biggest internal conflict is his. I guess, yeah, as I said, she inspires me to live authentically and to, you know, hopefully make choices that, you know, I guess she's quite unapologetic in her actions, and she inspires me in that sense. She does what is right for her, and, you know, I don't think I would take it to the nth degree as she does, but, you know, there is some inspiration in that and just sort of doing what is right for you.
The show is I Am My Own Wife. The director is Sean Rennie. Thanks for joining us on Worldwide Wave.
Thank you so much, Matt.
Joy is, of course, the official community radio partner and longtime supporter of the Midsummer Festival.
Indeed, and that's actually one that I will be going to. I think that sounds like a really intriguing play. One other thing that did come out in the trans arena just yesterday, a survey of 23 countries and how people within the country feel about transgender rights. Who do you think is most progressive, most accepting of transgender people on basic rights?
I kind of guessed this one because of because of watching so many Almodovar movies. So of course, Spain happened to be number one.
España, yeah.
Thanks, Pedro.
And then you've got up there Sweden, Argentina, and Canada as well. I'd pick all those.
And which country? Surprise, surprise. Was the least accepting of transgender people.
Well, so now this is only the 23 they surveyed, but of those, Russia. Who would have thought?
Shocking.
Yeah, yeah. Australia, we came in at number 9.
So who did we beat?
So we beat the USA, Mexico, France, Italy, Brazil, South America. Gee, there's some, you know, some big hitters there. It's not every country or anything, but we've still got a little way to go.
I wonder what the transgender community of Australia and our trans listeners would think of our place in those rankings. I'm surprised we're number 9. I thought we'd be much lower than that, to be honest.
Indeed. A message in. I understand the concept of what people say about, quote, we are all in drag at different parts of our life, but strongly disagree with the concept.
RuPaul won't be happy with that.
And I find typically it comes from those in the drag community or with the strong links to it. Personally, I think the statement is akin to telling transgender person, that their life is just drag. It's not acceptable to promote this concept. And thank you for that message, Brad. Yeah, interesting. We certainly weren't meaning any offence at all, but good to hear your voices here on Joy 94.9. We like people disagreeing with us too. This show is about bringing different voices and different stories from around the world.
Yeah, we don't want one of those echo chamber shows where it's all, I completely agree, Matt. And Paul, that was so smart. Oh my goodness.
Say something else. I wouldn't mind one of them every now and then, you know.
They obviously don't hear us after the mics go off and we bag each other.
Well, mostly you, Paul.
True.
Yeah.
This is
Conchita versed all over again.
This is World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
Dzień dobry. I am Kylie from Poland. It's great to have a place like Joy 94.9, where we can talk about trans issues from across the globe on a World Wide Wave.
Another message. We love Tom. Tom's got a fan club. You've only been here for a few shows.
It's because it's that photo we just put on Facebook. That's it. At W3 Joy, which is our Facebook page. And thank you to all the wonderful people, Kuhn and Rosemary and Brian and Izzy and Dylan and all the other ones who interacted with us over the last week on Facebook.
To our guest tonight, Sean Rennie, the director of the Midsummer Show, I Am My Own Wife.
Not forgetting our podcaster, Mark and Gordon on the front desk.
And all those lovely messages, Brad Graham 317, and a few anonymous. Thank you very much. Catch you next week on World Wide Wave.
Thanks for listening to another podcast of World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne, or online at joy.org.au. You'll find all of our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave. Or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3Joy on Facebook now.
Joy 94.9, Australia's best radio station.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.